This is what I'm going to talk about is the work that I've been doing for the last year and a half almost as part of the Midwest Center for Structural Genomics. The EBI collaborates with three different groups mainly, but all the work that we are doing will be made available to all the other groups as and when it's released. This is the general policy of EBI software or resources. It's generally made usable for all. The one I'm employed by is the Midwest Center for Structural Genomics, but there's also the Structural Proteomics in Europe, the Spine Network, and the Structural Genomics Consortium, which has just recently started up. I believe it's looking at human proteins and more specifically disease. Now, all the structural genomics groups seem to have different goals, but the overall, one of the overall aims of the structural genomics idea was to try and cover the fold space as much as possible. So, in the sequence landscape, so to speak, there's almost 1.5 million non-redundant sequences, and we've only got 5,500 non-redundant structures at the moment, which corresponds to about 25,000 deposits in the PDB. So from those 5,500 structures that we have, it's estimated you could probably get 250,000 to 260,000 homology modules. So the idea is, behind these projects, if you can actually get additional structures that are new folds, you should then be able to cover much, much more of the possible sequence space. Sorry. There always will be some that are unknown, totally novel ones that you won't be able to get by homology modelling. But if you can cover the vast majority, it'll cut down a lot of the work that's to be done in the future. So what I'm trying to do is assign the function, but how do you define the actual function of a protein? You can have the biochemical function, or you can have biological function. There's also various structural proteins as well, that's a function. But the 3D structure usually only provides the biochemical function. If you have one of the examples that was quoted in the paper recently was a duck eye protein, which is basically almost identical in structure and sequence to an enzyme in the liver of the duck, but expression in the eye has no catalytic function. The function in the eye is to serve as it helps bend the light. The shape of the protein when stacked together helps bend the light through the eye lens. So that's kind of some of the limitations in homology-based function assignment, in that you can have very high similarity to another structure, but function can diversify quite radically. So various homology methods. We've got sequence similarity. You can do BLAST searches, PFAM searches, all the kind of sequence motifs, hidden Markov modelling. All of these can pull out quite similar sequences, which may indicate some function. You can compare the surface of proteins, it's thought that the most common binding sites are in the largest clefts of proteins most of the time, although there are situations where a cleft on the other side of the protein can influence the active site. So you can compare surfaces, clefts, pockets. You can have overall structural similarity, fold recognition. An example would be the helix-turn-helix motifs, DNA bindings, proteins. And then again, we've now got active site templates, which is a 3D template method, which is a bit like the, it's the 3D equivalent of the ProSite patterns. Basically, the active site templates are enzymes with specific functions tend to conserve those residues that have catalytic activity, and a lot of the time the residues are in the same 3D orientation. So we've got a database of, I think it's 189 different enzymes and the 3D coordinates for the active site residues, which we can search for and identify similar structures. Now, the new part of our work is a reverse template idea. Rather than having enzyme templates where you have 50 enzymes, all have three residues highly conserved in the same orientation, and you use that to develop a template, what we do in this situation is, if you have a structure of unknown function, what you do is you try and identify the most highly conserved residues in the protein, and then use them to automatically generate as many different templates as you want. So you end up with lots and lots of different small fragments, all highly conserved, in the hope that one or more of them might actually be active site residues. So each one of these templates can then be scanned against the PDB quite efficiently to pull out matches to those three residues in the same orientation. So the idea is, if you have a structure with unknown function, one of the templates matched a structure with known function, you could possibly try and infer a similar function. However, you get hundreds, thousands of hits, and the use of RMSD doesn't really help, because you get very random hits that match quite highly, especially when you've only got two or three residues. And unfortunately, the top hit, when we know what the function is, isn't even the correct hit. So as an example, we have an enzyme with an EC number 111158. It contains the three residues that mark the catalytic site and are used to perform a reaction. And we're going to use that to try and test the template method. So you know in advance that the template's there, and you just want to see whether it picked it up or not. So the hits for this structure, all in the top five, can't see our hit at all. Now our hit comes somewhere around about 100. So on all the methods we've got, you wouldn't have picked that as being the most likely function. The dehydrogenase function would have came up the most likely target. Now the reason for this is because of its low RMSD, and that's mainly due to the glutamate residue, which is quite dramatically different between the two structures. So this led to the idea that perhaps just the three residues isn't such a good idea to check on. You should check on surrounding binding site, just to see whether there's more similarity round about. So if you just match on the three residues, you have your structure that derived the template in the first place, and you have your new structure, which you're trying to see, is it similar? So the first thing to do is actually to figure out, I think it's about 10 angstroms we use, maybe 5 to 10 angstroms, sphere round about those active site residues from the template. Now, if these two structures perform a similar function, the binding site should be similar shape, similar size, and similar electrostatics in it. It should have similar arrangements of residues that help the substrates to bind. The first thing you do is pick all the other residues round about that are identical
So as you can see, there's quite a few residues that are very, very close in shape, but also have the exact same residue. And then you look for residues that are similar. So this just brings in some additional residues around about the side that are not such good matches, but are chemically possibly quite similar. When you do that and re-evaluate the scoring system, which is based on the number of residues that are similar, the RMSD and various other factors, it brings their function out on top. So, Profunk, which is a service that Roman has been developing, is an automatic server that is used to perform as many different homology based methods as we can use. It does sequence comparisons, BLAST, interprobe scan. We do a fold matching algorithm using SSM at the ABI. We also use all the enzyme active site templates, but we also have DNA templates, ligand binding templates, and all the reverse templates. We perform surface clefts, identification, and residue conservation score analysis, and various other analyses too. When I first started, each of these would have to be run separately. So I'd sit down one day and do maybe try and look at fold homology. So you'd send off to three or four different servers, wait for the results to come back, or emailed results to come back, then at the same time try and figure out other things and run sequence analysis, all kinds of stuff. It took quite a long time. So now we can run it on PC farm at EBI in parallel, and instead of the job taking days to do, it now only takes maybe an hour or two, depending on load or how complicated your structure is. So I'll just show you what the actual service looks like. Basically, the user has the option of submitting a structure, or you can look up existing PDB files. The whole idea of it is you upload a structure, and then it sends you back a link to your results. So while you're waiting, you can go off, make a cup of tea, have dinner, something like that. Don't know. Come back and your results are there. Well, at least that's the theory behind it anyway. So you would basically upload your file and head on. Enter an email address and pick a title depending on what you want to disclaim it as, identify different runs of the same structure, and set it off running. So basically what will happen is this display screen will stay up, and you can sit there and watch all the lights flash away as each analysis performs and comes back, and as each analysis comes through, the results display below, until eventually each of the analyses is complete and you end up with a full list of results. So in this case we've got a probable glutaminase enzyme, unknown function, but estimated to be a glutaminase due to its sequence similarity to known glutaminases, which is picked up by the interprobe scan. We also do a match against the PDB. We do a BLAST against the PDB structures just to make sure that there's no structures of high sequence similarity already out there. In theory, in a structural genomics project, you shouldn't actually get strong matches to the existing PDB because they are supposed to be targeting novel folds. So in theory, there shouldn't be something out there. We then do fold matching, which is SSM, residue conservation scores, which is BLAST against SwissProt, put through ClustalW and then calculate residue conservation scores for each point in the sequence. We also perform a blast search against other organisms, so that if you can identify a gene, sometimes it's helpful to know the location on the genome. If surrounding genes have a similar function or it's part of a an operon, then that would be an additional help when the experimentalists are trying to assign function or possible ligand binding. So go through surface class, DNA binding motifs, nests. Nests are something I was working on for my PhD, which are basically very small structural motifs involving the backbone atoms of proteins. It's quite often in active sites and ligand binding sections you can find the main chain helps to stabilise the binding of the ligand. They're also found in structural motifs such as the ends of helices and various other ion binding sites. So and then we go on to do all the other enzyme template analysis, enzymes, ligands, DNA, reverse templates. So as you can see, a possible match would be to beta-lactamase in this instance. It gives the template match, and then further down you get other analyses as to how well that template matched along with a structural alignment. Now, the structural alignment here is based on fittable residues. Now, the description of what the fittable residue is down the bottom here. The fittable segment is that it's got to have at least 7 residues that fit with RMSD, less than 3 angstroms. So this situation will give you a, you can click and open up a RASmol display, which will show the two structures of the template and your query structure matched by these fittable segments, not by the template match itself. So it gives another indication as to how well overall it matches the two proteins. And then DNA. So in this kind of example, the vast majority of results are actually pointing towards a beta-lactamase activity rather than a probable glutaminase, because we have all of these are beta-lactamase hits, all very high scoring. All the ligand template matches were to lactamases, or most of them were. And you also have the enzyme template match. So that's just a general introduction to how the server works and the kind of stuff that we do with it. So, some examples actually. How does this actually work? 3 examples show that it's not perfect. Things don't work all the time. Sometimes you get absolutely no results out, whereas sometimes you get very, very good functional assignments, and there's quite a lot of range in between the two. So the first good example we've got is of BioH structure. It was an unknown function protein, and when we run it through the analysis, it comes out with a very strong match to the active site of a catalytic triad. So we sent this back to the experimentalists, and they performed various assays and actually confirmed that it is a novel carboxylase acting on short chain
short acyl chain substrates. That was recently published. So we have function discovered. Now for one that's not such good. It's assigned as a probable glutaminase. This was the one that we went through on the example on the server. And the beta-lactamases are very well known, and they have very, very specific pro-site patterns. So when we looked at the sequence of our structure, we discovered that the vast majority of the sequence matches the pro-site, the class A beta-lactamase pattern, except for 2 points. You've got 2 isoleucines instead of 3-nane valine there, and this is all structural based and template based. It was all the homology came from. They look very similar to lactamases, and the template matches come. So I thought, well, why did it not hit the Interpol scan? Because there's lots and lots of beta lactamase sequences out there. So when you compare the classy beta lactamase sequence with our sequence, they both use an active site serine, and all the other residues are conserved minus these two. So based on the fact that just those two residues weren't in the pattern, that's why it wasn't picked up. Now, whether this is another beta-lactamase or not has yet to be assayed. It could well be that it is a new beta-lactamase. That might be the new active site, and we should actually update the pro-site pattern. Or it could be a chance match, and the actual activity of the protein has been changed through evolution, slightly. So until the actual assays are complete, there's no way of saying one way or another whether it's a definite match or not. And a lot of the examples that we're finding are in this case. You will get matches to a handful of different functions, but until the actual experiments are done, you can't say one way or another what's true. No, it's got the actual active site, the beta lactamase is there. It's over a beta shape. Yeah, it does look like that. They did various graph matches as well, and it's similar. This section down here is excess. So the majority of the actual beta lactamase fit that, but the rest of the structure doesn't match. And then we've got one that doesn't work at all. We have no sequence motifs. We have very poor residue conservation scores. The fold is Rossmann fold, so lots and lots of possible functions, all different. And all the template methods fail on it completely. So we have absolutely no way of knowing on the homology methods that we use at the moment what this does. So that hasn't helped the experiments one bit. So currently I'm in the midst of analysing all the structural genomics targets, which works out about 561 structures to look through. So we ran it all in parallel on the farm, and it took about 4 days to complete. So we've just got to go through the results now. We've yet to improve the scoring scheme, because depending on the cutoffs used, you'll get better matches. So using a data set of known enzymes, using a data set of known DNA binding proteins, we can then assess the scoring system better. The whole thing utilises SOAP services now as well. So any new service that comes up should be relatively easy to plug in, such as Keg at the moment is set up its API service. So we could in theory link to any hits you get back. You can then go to Keg, get the gene IDs, and then go from there to find other routes.
And it's thinking it's actually possible to adapt the server, since it is XML and SOAP based, or to turn it into an XML and SOAP based system. So you could actually incorporate it as part of a LIM system, or as a workflow, because I've been looking at the MyGrid and Taverna software recently, which allows the user to set up it's a visually orientated workflow. Rather than writing lots and lots of scripts, you select the services you want to run through in sequence and which order, and it goes off and does it for you and sends the results back. But that's going to take quite a bit of work. And lots of work at the ABI is currently moving towards more truly predictive work. Rather than homology-based methods, which are successful to a level, we are going to have to find more and more analogous situations. So we've started using things, working on electrostatic potentials of the surface of the protein and binding sites, ligand prediction algorithms, which using spherical harmonics. Richard Morris is working on that at the moment. And catalytic residue prediction using neural networks to try and actually find the most likely catalytic residues. We're also incorporating other resources from UCL, such as the Gene3D. So overall, just going to acknowledge the various people involved. Janet Thornton's my boss. Roman Laskowski has developed Profunk. Richard Morris is involved in set up the Interpro search for us that got plugged into Profunk. And he's also now working on ligand prediction. Gail Bartlett, Craig Porter were involved in the original enzyme template development. Alex Goodridge is looking at catalytic residue predictions. Sue Jones and Hugh have both been working on DNA binding, and Hugh's been working on electrostatics as well, I believe. Jonathan Barker wrote the Jess algorithm, which is the algorithm we use to search and scan for templates. Hannes wrote the PITA program, which is for interfaces. And SOAP services provide them, Martin Singer and CMAC. The MCSD gave us lots and lots of free access to their structures as they were solving them. And there's lots more at EBI and UCL working on that. So, thank you very much.
Questions?
It's not 100% like that. We can send a password and log in. So. You basically have to use Twitter and ask for the best matches. What I tend to do is, the whole idea of it is that if you get lots and lots of different analyses all pointing to the one direction, that'll cut down. But if you get a situation where only one thing matches, or they all point lots and lots of different functions, it doesn't help that much, but it does help narrow down the search space of assays you can perform. So if you get maybe 5 or 6 possible functions, that you can just do those 5 assays, see how they work, and if they fail, unfortunately, there's nothing much else to do. But that's the same with most of the methods.
My question I have is, you have a method that is under continual evolution.
Yeah.
And one of the hardest things in terms of getting anything is quantifying reliability, quantifying success rate, quantifying performance. So how do you quantify how well this procedure is working? Especially how do you keep the performance statistics current as the
But what I'm currently doing is working on 500 structures, and
the procedure and planning and using for that is based on what we know in advance from the information that's in the PPP file, and all the header and journal information, and from the Google annotation database, because they've annotated quite a lot of the structures. Based on that, how many of the procedures actually pull out what's already known?
The problem with that is that there may be information involved in
For making the sequence motifs, that we can't actually take into the fact that these have been used to make sequence information. But for all the structural stuff, we can tell the service not to pull out anything that was released after that date or anything that's above a certain sequence identity to itself. So in that way, you can pull out information that is truly this is not known before. Or these are home loads that we haven't seen before that sequence methods didn't pick up. So on the basis of that, we can then say, well, if that's successful, these ones that we know, the function, the ones that we function we don't know at all, we can try and estimate how well it's going to work. But until somebody actually tests the predictions, we can't actually say. And it can take quite a long time to get somebody to respond to any queries to perform a particular assay. So
sort of following the Rubik's question, maybe you'd answer that if you should. When you run your test at 500 proteins, I mean, you should then have statistics on how you arrive at which aspect is. So
yeah.
If you're sequencing an argument, you get the correct answer 90% of the time, you should use that somehow. Then it's below sort of some level, you should find co-site as the next best thing. So you can try and
Well, we're just going to try and figure out which methods work, are the most successful, first of all. And also to try and get a measure of how reliable this new reverse method is.
You could do, like David Jones did, the train your net to optimize for the reliability of all the aspects.
But to follow up on Willie's comment, I can imagine that, for instance, methods that might be appropriate for kinases might be very different from methods that are particularly appropriate for another class of enzymes. So it might be somewhat heterogeneous in terms of.
I think there is a general tendency towards certain types of enzymes being pulled out by some of the methods. This is just based on a loose looking through what I've seen already in the 500. You tend to see certain types of protein coming back up and then again. And whether those are ones that have one of the superfolds or whether it's something that works particularly well in a template method, I don't know. But that's something we need to check out.
That's positive comment. On the reverse
template,
what has to do for about 5 or 6 years
ago? Yeah, it's what's his service called? Well, the method that we've got just now not only takes into account the MSD, but it takes into account the order and the sequence as well, so it's, there's additional measures in the scoring systems, so, and
thanks for everyone for making this a very interesting session.